Okay. Good morning. We are learning today the 15th perek. We're learning today the 15th perek of the Gvuras Hashem. And as we have mentioned, the derech, the way that the Gvuras Hashem works, a little bit different than many of the others from the Maral, is that he's going to be marching here through. This is almost like a running commentary on, in this section, in these prokim, it's a running commentary on the beginning of Sefer Shmos, the description of the Golos of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim as it began, as it happened. So where we are up to, in the last perek we spoke about the original plan of Havan Ischakmalai, Pen Yirbe, the plan of the Egyptians to impose on the Jewish people to be mevatel the tzura of the Jewish people. Remember that idea of unity versus being split in different directions, mayim, and so on and so forth that we talked about last week. Excuse me, I'm just going to get a chumash for a moment so I can read to you. It's okay, my husband is lying a lot. So the pasuk describes after this thing. So vayisim alav sarimisim, they put on them sarimisim, we usually translate as task masters or tax collectors. It could be, you know, both of them, and they were placed upon the Jewish people, and it was a love, right? The Maral again emphasized that it was trying to put it on the Am as a whole. They were trying to be mevatel. They were trying to negate the unity of the Jewish people. And so this is the thing, like Havan Ischak Maloi, like he said last time, this idea of division. But now where we're going to start is with Vayiven Ari Miskinais Lefarai Es Pisaim Ves Ramses. And he built, Klal Yisrael built Ari Miskinais for Paro, Pisaim and Ramses. What are Ari Miskinais? What does the term Ari Miskinais mean? Right? In the Targum, it describes Kirve Beis Aitzara, right? Towns of storehouses. In other words, big storage facilities, silos, or whatever kind of structures the Egyptians would build in order to storm things. That's the term Miskinais, and Rashi explains that we find this as a Hebrew word, as a biblical word, Seichein, right? Lechboel HaSeichein Haloz. A Seichein was a treasurer. So, you know, like a person who's like in charge. And it's used in modern Hebrew as well, in a certain sense, somebody who's in charge of resources, a sachnut, you know, this is the term. So Ari Miskinais was for that purpose. However, Chazal Darshan, right, Rashi, the Maral brings, the two drashos Chazal which we have over here, Rav Shmuel, Chad Omar Shemisakenes Es Baleim, V'chad Omar Baleim Mismaskinim. Two plays on the word of Miskinais. One is that Miskinais is related to the term Sakana. Sakana means danger. And the other is miskein. Miskein means someone who is weak, right? Nebuch, right? You would say in Yiddish. And the Gemara says that on the one hand, right? One says shemsakenes es baleihem because it endangered them, and the other one said because it depleted them. It depleted them tremendously. Kala oisek bebinyan mismaskein. A person who is involved in binyan, in construction, mismaskein, will run out of energies, will be drained by virtue of the person's involvement in binyan. What does this mean? What are these pshatim? So what the Maral says again, and he's explaining this whole process a little bit piecemeal, and it's you know, that you have to look how the pieces put together a puzzle. But he says that the idea is that the specific shibud, the specific bondage through which he put the Bnei Yisrael was one which would weaken them, which would undermine them. And the idea is, of course, that shibud in itself, the fact that they're working for somebody else, is in itself a negative thing. That they're enslaved and bound to somebody else is in itself a negative thing. It's in itself something which undermines the Jewish people. But Paro didn't just have them do a normal, proper job, one which would be just that their efforts are not going for themselves, their efforts were going to somebody else. But he had them do a job that would compromise the Bnei Israel, that would severely compromise the Jewish people. And how did he intend to do that? So there are two panim, there are two aspects to it. One was that they were it was dangerous work. Misakenes es baleim. It was dangerous work. These are imiskenes. And so it was physically compromising them by virtue of the danger. And the other was that it just drained them. It drained them. Binyan is ha'isik b'binyan mismaskein. What's the idea that it's mismaskein? Writes the Maral, ki adavar hazeh yesh bei tairach gadol ve'ein lei dvar keitz v'seif. He says construction has no end in sight, right? It just works and works. The Gemara describes it as sort of like being a drain. Anybody who's done construction knows to what it's referring. One thing leads to another. You can always add more. You always can encounter challenges that make you have to undo something and to do it again. And in a sense, the level of work and investment, the Maral in a moment is going to contrast it with planting, with working in the fields. And with working in the fields, there's much more of a finite amount of work that you do. Right? You're pretty limited, because to a great degree, the process is organic. It happens by itself. Right, you put the seeds in the ground. What are you going to do already? You're going to have a choice whether you're going to have porcelain tile seeds or vinyl tile seeds. You know, like, what are you going to do? You just put the seeds in the ground. You plow it up, you put the seeds in the ground, you water it, you do some weeding. There's a limit to what can be done, because you're dealing primarily with a natural and organic process. Whereas with binyan, it's so unpredictable, and it's so unlimited in terms of the level of effort that you could put in, the amount of time you would put into binyan. It can go in any which direction, and therefore it tends to be draining. It tends to be far more unpredictably draining. People don't go as often over budget in their seating budget as they do in their building budget. It's just, that's the nature of the enterprise, that's the nature of the work. That's why he's mismaskein bebinyan. That's the idea which he says there. And he says that, again, these are both indications of how difficult the shivud was. In a certain sense, he says that the difference is that sakana is quality and mismaskein is quantity. Now, sakana is quality, that it was dangerous work, challenge in the quality and the nature of the work. And ha'isik v'binyan mismaskein is because it just keeps growing and growing. The job never ends. And that's more in the quantity of the task. But he then says, concludes the Maral, this piece on Vayiven Ari Miskenais, is that he specifically wanted them to be involved in binyan, in construction, and not in planting. So far he said one side of it, and that side of it was because planting has finite amount of effort, whereas building has infinite amount of effort. But now he takes that argument and sort of turns it around, and he says because building has finite results, where planting does not. In the world of planting, there's a bracha. Right? You put in a certain amount, and who knows what will come out. Great things can come out of it. Right? You plant something and it can grow prolifically, it can grow so productively. But you know, when you build something, you can wait and wait and wait, you can water it, you can give it lots of sunshine, but it will never grow beyond what you put in. Binyan is limited. It's limited. By its nature, it is what it is. And in the realm of Shibud, what Paro was trying to do here, was that he was trying to be limiting the Jewish people. The whole nature of a Shibud, Hava Nischach Malei Pen Yirbe, he was trying to limit the Jewish people from being Nisbarech, from being blessed, from growing. He was worried about the growth of the Jewish people. So when he wanted to curtail the growth of the Jewish people, not only did he give them work that was dangerous, not only did he give them work that was like unending, that one thing always leads to another, but he gave them work whose yield was very limited, was very circumscribed. He wanted to bring the world of the Jewish people to close in around them. He wanted to narrow it. And so building in itself is part of that process. I'm sure that all of you are familiar with Rav Volba's beautiful and often repeated construct about chinuch, about education and development, where he speaks about the two forms of zriya ubinyan, of planting and building, and how we combine those two. That building is discipline, is where you impose sort of a structure and an image and a mold and an outline and a form on somebody. Whereas tzmicha, zriya, is where you allow their natural strengths to grow and to flourish. You just give it the right environment and let the person do their own thing instead of having it imposed upon them. And, you know, as he explains so beautifully, and as we well know, that it's the combination, the art form of finding the right combination between zriya and binyan that creates the healthy, balanced child. If you just let them grow according to their kaychas, they'll be wild and unlimited entirely, right, without any sense of discipline or control. And on the other hand, if you just impose control and you just build in structure, then the life force that has the ability to actually develop and to create things beyond the specific script will be suffocated and will be stunted. Says Paray that in the world of Shibud, which is where you're trying to in fact subordinate, break the individuality, the power, the energy, the organic strength that can develop from a people, put them into binyan, put them into construction, and that will be much more bringing that home and creating a narrow belt around them, limiting their growth, than if they would be in a world of tzmicha, of planting. That's how he explains it, the primary thing. Now, the pasuk later, I would just mention as a note, that describes, and we'll talk about it slightly, it's uvechol avoida basada, speaks all kinds of work in the field, right, which one might imagine might be planting, but the pasuk certainly is much less descriptive of that kind of job of the Jewish people. The jobs of the Jewish people, what we find about that are highlighted by the pasuk and highlighted by Chazal, was not the job of farmers. Right, the avoda basada that we know about, perhaps to some degree, was even more just gathering in the straw and so on and so forth, the stuff that they needed for furthering the construction process. But that was their main work was the avoda of chaymer and levain in the work of construction, and that's the Maral's insight as to why. Okay, next step. So he built Ari Miskanos to Paray, Pisaim and Ramses. What's Pisaim and Ramses? What are Pisaim and Ramses? So again, Chazal bring the machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said that its real name was Ramses and Pisaim was a nickname, and the other one said its real name was Pisaim and Ramses was the nickname. So what's the idea? So the one says its real name was Ramses, but it was called Pisaim because Pisaim is a contraction of two words, Pi-tahaim. Pi-tahaim is the mouth of the depths. Right? When we say that when we speak about the mouth of the depths, we speak about something being swallowed up by the earth. Rishon, rishon, pi-tahaim b'alai. As you construct it, as you did one step, the tahaim, the depth, would swallow it up. Right? This is one of the bases for that famous image of the construction that the Jewish people did in Mitzrayim, that they were building, so to speak, on quicksand. That as soon as they finished constructing something, it would collapse, be swallowed up by the ground. And so, again, as Pare wants the Jewish people to be circumscribed and limited, and on the basic level, of course, there's nothing which is more demoralizing. Even if you're a slave for somebody else, when you finish your job, you have a little bit of a feeling of satisfaction. But when you see it disappear into the ground, there's nothing which is more demoralizing, adding another nail to the coffin of the morale than that. Especially in light of what we just learned in the morale, that he was trying to limit the bracha of the Jewish people by curtailing what they could produce. So there we spoke about even producing things with limits. How much more so producing nothing. Right? Pitahim Bailai. So that's why it was called Pisaim. And the other one said, its real name was Pisaim. It was called Ramses, Sharishain Rishain Misraises. Misraises is that it would degenerate, it would break up. It wouldn't be swallowed up by the earth, but it would just fall apart. It just couldn't stay there. It just couldn't stay there. So, what's the idea here? So again, it would seem in a certain sense to be two sides of the same coin. So the Maharal says, well, there's a difference between the two of them. They're both speaking about the fact that it breaks. And he says that the idea is there's something sometimes where destruction comes upon something from the outside, and there's such a thing as something which is inherently weak, inherently diseased, that it won't be able to last, that it's going to fall apart. Rav focuses on the fact that Heder from the outside, Pitaim, the grave will come and swallow it up. Sort of, you know, it's not the problem with the building, it's the problem with the sand under the building. You know, it will come, that the earth is going to open up and take it away. And the other one says, no, it's inherent, an inherent issue within the item itself. Right? As the Maharal writes a little bit later in this paragraph, Kidavar Ashein Roy Liyais. Something which doesn't deserve to be, which isn't supposed to exist, nimtzum isreises me atzmai, it will fall apart of its own. Umitchila ein lechium klal, to begin with, it doesn't have the ability to last. Ume atzmai nishbar umisreises, it will break itself, it will degenerate on its own. That's the expression mrishain mishain misreises. You don't need something from the outside in order to be able to make this happen. It'll happen internally. The breakup will happen by itself. Now, the yesod, the foundation here, however, that the Maharal says, is, he says, you know, you can take this, as we say, as we were explaining originally, from a psychological angle. Right? Para is getting the Jewish people to do a job. He wants to break them down. He wants to demoralize them. So he has them do it something that won't succeed, that won't really produce anything. Right? The Gemara speaks about Vachechem and Yisrael, Esir Dabam Beforech, when Jews could have slaves. The Torah allows for the institution of slavery. So by a Ben Yisrael, it's, you know, a person's always supposed to treat their slaves, as the Rambam writes in the end of Hilchos Avodim, with mercy. However, especially there are greater halachic, basic legal limits by a Jew, and one of them is that you can't have them do something for the sake of keeping them busy. You can only have them do something where you need the output of the work. Right? Sometimes you would say, you know, it's good, they should just keep them busy. Right? That's asserting mastery without trying to actually just use it for a practical purpose, which is the extent to which it's allowed. So again, we could see it as a sort of psychological warfare that Pare is doing in order to break down the Jewish people's drive, their will to live. Everything they're doing is falling apart. However, of course you could imagine that Pare wouldn't be interested in that. That Pare would rather actually use the slave labor force for productive purposes. You know, lahavdil alaf alfik, why am I saying lahavdil alaf alfik alfik? No lahavdil. When the Nazis, yimach shemam v'zichram, enslaved the Jewish people, so of course a big part of their work, their strategy, was psychological warfare, to demoralize the Jewish people, to do all of this stuff, the kashkenir, you know, to pen yirbe, you know, they were trying to somehow shrink the morale, the vision, the horizon of the Jewish people by having us enslaved for all of these tasks. and you know, even to enslave us to do things which would bring about our own destruction, Rahmana Litzlan, you know, which is a terribly demoralizing thing. But they used the work of the Jewish people whenever they could for their war effort. They needed things done. They needed tunnels dug. They needed railways built. They needed all kinds of things accomplished. They needed munitions. So they took a slave labor force and they used them for something that would produce for them. Pare didn't think of that. When Pare wanted Ore Miskenais, it was just that it should be Miskei Nebuch. It should just be that it's destroyed. He didn't need storage chambers. He didn't need his pyramids. Presumably he did. But it didn't work. Whatever he created through the avod of the Jewish people ended up falling apart. That's another view on this. And that's the view which Maharal explains here. And he says like this. He says that Shibud of the Habinin Asher Bornu B'nei Yisrael L'Hoya Roi Udvoram Shein Einam Ru'uyim Liyos Nimtsoim Ein Kiyum Lohem. Says the Maharal that the notion, the specter of the Jewish people building cities for Paro is not a proper picture. It's not the way it should be. And again, we don't have the benefit at this point of Rabbi Hartman's notes on the Gvuras Hashem. But I think it's correct to say that what the Maharal is alluding to here is what the Maharal wrote about. We learned in the Netzach Yisrael and in other places that the idea of a nation being meshubad and being in golus is in itself unnatural. It's not roi. That's what makes golus golus. Golus is golus because you're out of the normal, natural environment in which you're supposed to be. You're out of the place in which you're supposed to be. You're out of being able to do what you were created to do. Shibud is where you don't do what you were created to do. You do what somebody else wants you to do for their designs. So therefore, it's an unnatural environment. Yes, it's true that Hashem made a gzeira that the Jewish people should be meshubad to Mitzrayim. But what was the gzeira? The gzeira was that the Jewish people should be in an environment which is unnatural to them, in an environment which is unsuitable to them. So when the Jewish people are in a situation which by nature is not natural, which by nature is temporary, remember that was one of the beautiful ideas that the Maharal taught us in the Netzach Yisrael, that golus must come to an end because it's an unnatural state. And an unnatural state always has to come to an end. Something has to mean you can pull something away from its natural state, but it will end up back where it's supposed to be. It has to end up. That's where it's supposed to be. So therefore, says the Maharal, because it's an unnatural state, it can't last. And that's why we know we have a confidence that the golus won't last. But because Pisaim and Ramses were built by a Jewish people who weren't where they're supposed to be, doing what they're supposed to be doing, not in a natural state, so therefore what they make cannot be something which is permanent and lasting. The whole thing is a farce, and therefore we'll have this inherent weakness, whether Misraises or whether Pita Haim Bailai, it just can't continue to exist. I want to just share with you a little nakuda in this regard, a related point. I just think it's a gewaldic, huge, huge thing that Rav Moshe Shapira teaches about the Bris HaKeshes, the Mabul, teaches about the covenant which Hashem established that He wouldn't destroy the world, which is with the rainbow. And the rainbow is called a Keshes. What other word means Keshes? What other word does Keshes mean? Is a bow, an archer's bow, because of course it's shaped in the same way. And Rav Moshe says, I mean, he says has a lot to say about it, but the core notion, which is mishunadik, beautiful and significant, is that what's the force of a bow? What's the force of a bow? You have this bowed piece of wood or plastic or whatever it is, and you have a string which, you know, is on a line, in a straight line between it. That's the position of the string. That's the natural position of the string. When you pull it back, right, so you create the tension on the metar, on the strand of the bow, right? And then, what then is the force when you let go? What's the force that drives the arrow forward? It's because you pulled the string away from its position, and it's just driven to come back to where it's supposed to be. That's the power, that's the force of the bow. It says the bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of the king of the world, is that as much as we might deviate and create a deviant society and a strange society like we did in the time of the Mabul, there's a force which pulls us back to where we're supposed to be. And that's the bris. Isn't that gorgeous?
That's amazing. Not only that, but the more distended, the more out of sync you are, the stronger the force.
Stronger the force to pull you back.
Snapping back to your natural position.
So connection to rainbow?
To the actual rainbow? Yeah, so it develops to that. But that notion itself, that kernel, as just a thing, it's what we're talking about here. It's unnatural. The Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim, yeah, picture them that way. They're like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm making a gzeira, I'm going to stretch you, pull you out. Okay, and while they're there, when the bow is pulled out, so someone's going to arrange a strand of pearls, along the bow, sitting on the edge of it, like sort of, not like completely around it. Shkoyach, then what's going to happen? Twang. Phew, it's all going to fall apart. What the Bnei Yisrael built while they were stretched in the wrong place can't have kiyum. It can't last. You can't look and say, here's the legacy of what the Jewish people built when they were there in Mitzrayim. It can't be. It can't be. That's the musig. That's the notion. It should. It should. I don't know what's left of what the slave laborers built in Germany and in Poland. I don't know what's left. I don't know if those rail lines are still used. I don't know.
I'm not even talking about the Shiva, but I'm even talking about just like this Wall Street. what the Jewish people feel is productive in any given country.
It's a good question, a fair question, and I don't know. I would be misinformed if I would be out of school if I would try to answer.
The interesting question would be, and I'm sure we don't know the answer either, is one who built the first base on Mikdash, we're doing what we're supposed to do in the right place, you think there'd be a kiyum, an eternal kiyum. Obviously it's relevant to today.
You still, even when you're in the right place, you have to do it right. And when we see the chesroinus in the first base on Mikdash, so the Chazal speak about certain failings that in ourselves when we went and we put it in and what we were doing, what we were constructing. So it's just being in the right place doesn't necessarily make it perfect. But the Maharal concludes this piece by saying, but something, he says, both opinions say it had a proper name, Pisaim or Ramses, and it had a name which was Al-Shem Hamura, the other name. And he says that the idea is like this, because on a certain level a king does have the right to be meshaved subjects, right? Even though we say shibud is unnatural, but on the other hand, part of the construct of the world is some kind of a hierarchy that's not completely unnatural. Society has a leader, and if you have a leader, so then to some degree the people are marshaled to do the work under the guidance of the leader. So there's a place for a city like Pisaim, or like Ramses. There's a place for a city to be built under the leadership of the king. But when the king overextends, that's what weakens it. That's what makes it undermined. Says the Maharal, that's what Chazal speak about. Pisaim and Ramses, right? They're sort of like making it one place, right? Ori Miskenais is not the simple pshat of the pasuk is cities of Miskenais. One was called Pisaim, and the other one was called Ramses. Chazal is saying it's one place with two names. And there are two aspects. There's the city that could have been here. There's the city that the king can look. If the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, and not so to speak mishubadim in the dramatic way, but just guests of Parai, and Even when the Jewish people came in the best of times with the Yosef, there would be things that they would be expected to do for the government. So there's such a thing. But it's the extension of it, it's the stretching of it beyond the way it's supposed to be that carries this nickname of what cannot last, of Rishon Rishon Misraises. Okay. That's the notion which he says. Okay. So we finished this pasuk as Pisaim Ves Ramses. And now we come to yes.
I guess in that he's trying to address why Rav Shmuel don't say, well, these names both have a clear implication, so let's
correct.
Assume that there were two cities and neither one had the right name. So why don't Chazal, is that what he's saying?
Right. That's what he's saying. One is a real name because there's a certain propriety to having people work for the king, and one was running because of the impropriety. Exactly right. The next pasuk says, "V'chasher yanu isai ken yirbe v'chein yifreitz," and to the measure that the Egyptians afflicted the Jewish people, so they grew and so they expanded. V'yakutzu mifnei b'nei Yisrael, and the Egyptians were disgusted by the Jewish people. Now you may recall that the Maral explained this idea already a few prakim ago in Perek Yud Beis. Maral explained this idea and he goes over it here. And the idea which he says is as follows, that the Bnei Yisrael, they have a physical essence and they have a spiritual essence. And there's sort of an inverse relationship that exists. The more you have koyach haguf, the more we're involved in physicality, the less we tend to be involved in spirituality. The less we are involved in physicality, the less the physical distraction, the stronger the spiritual is able to emerge. As we discussed last time, that's one of the reasons why we speak about the in praise of zikna, in praise of older age, why we have such respect for older people. Because since their physical drives and strengths have to some degree begun to diminish, their perspective, their wisdom becomes stronger. Says the Maharal that what the Egyptians were trying to do is they were trying to break down the Jewish people physically. That was what they were doing. The Egyptians were physical. They're fighting the Jewish people. They're downgrading them physically. But what they did not realize is that in the Jewish people aren't purely physical beings. Farkert. We have at our core the Koyach Eloki, the divine power, the divine strength, the Koyach HaKedusha. And therefore, the more, in a certain sense, the Jewish people were compromised as physical beings, the more the divine portion of themselves is left to emerge and to be strong. And so, when you're attached to that, then you know, the energy of the Kedusha becomes that much stronger. If the more we have built up an illusion of material and physical strength, so to some degree, the more we play by those rules, the more we grow according to those limits and according to those strengths. But when, instead, they break that, then only the spirit survives and it goes according to the world of the spirit. That's the irony of the Chasher Yanu Oisai Kein Yerbe V'Chein Yifreitz. And this is a notion which is, you know, the way the Maharal is expressing this specifically in terms of the growth of the spiritual numbers which are there for the Bnei Yisrael, for the Jewish people. But many speak about it. Right? I think last year, Tisha B'Av, I shared something which, you know, the Kleisberger Rebbe, you know, wrote about, you know, in terms of in this regard, where the, but you know, whatever he, so many speak of it in these terms. Even you look in the pasuk to a certain degree, as the Jewish people get to Eretz Yisrael and they grow and they start to develop and they develop, build all these things, they build houses, they build things, and they get distracted from the spiritual. So dislodging us from the material success, which is developing our own homeland, to some degree helps us to say, oh, one second, we lost all the physicality, now let's hone in, let's focus in on the spiritual, on the ruach. As the Chayyus Halvava says, Kefi Sheyarbed, as the body builds itself, the Seichel shrinks. As the Seichel builds, the body shrinks. There's a certain inverse relationship between physicality and spirituality. And the Egyptians here, in a certain sense, trying to break the physicality, left the spirit to be able to be stronger. Now you can ask questions about this, because, you know, in a conscious way we know again that the Jewish people had certain significant spiritual failings as their physical bodies went, as they were being afflicted. But in a, yes, that's true, in a certain conscious way, of course, we're beings of body and soul, and when the body is down, the soul is distracted, the mind is distracted from greater things. But on the other hand, there's also the idea that our pretense of physical strength is displaced by saying, we can only rely on Avinu Shebashamayim. Now you know that Mishnah in Saita, that memory in the end of Saita, where it says that when Ikvasa the Mashicha, this happens, that happens, this breaks down, that breaks down, and all we can rely on is our Father in heaven. Right? And in some sense, of course, that's saying, Ay Nebuch, you know, we have nothing of our own. But the way it's known, Chafetz Chaim, Rav Ochanan, right, they said, that's the beginning of the solution. You know, when you erase all of the imagined material strengths and all you have left is the Rabbanu Shalom, that's when real strength can flourish. That's when real strength can grow. That's what the Maharal said back there. He says it here in very similar words. Interestingly, he says, earlier, we explained a different reason. But if you look earlier, you find pretty much the same reason, just in slightly different words. So this is a situation where the updated edition of the Gvuras Hashem, the Machon Maral edition, edited by Rabbi Lapiansky and others, is very helpful. Why? Because in this edition, they have actually two versions of the Gvuras Hashem, our version with footnotes, and the Gvuras Hashem Miktav Yad, a second manuscript of the Gvuras Hashem, which was slightly different. Not just, you know, many times you have the same book, just this guy copied it this way, and it's like, you know, when it gets hand copied, so sometimes you end up with slightly different things to compare. This is actually a different manuscript, so it was structured a little bit differently. And Perek Yudbeis, our 12th Perek, is its 11th Perek. And it has in it stuff that's not in the first one at all. And what the Maharal seems to be referring to is something which it says here, which is also a very logical svara. And the logical idea that he says here, in Kasher Yanu Aisai Kein Yerbeh V'chein Yifreitz, so he says as follows, Kasher Bo Dover al Dover lihiskaber ulahafsid Aisai. Okay, if you ever get your hands on this edition, it's on page Shin Mem Vav in the second column in the middle, in a different typeface, which is what they use for stuff which isn't in the other book. Kasher bo dover al dover lihiskaber ulahafsid Aisai. When something rises up against another to try to oppose it, miskaber al hasheni bechazaka yaser v'yaser gedeshli yinifsad, then what happens? Then the one which is being attacked arches its back. Its survival instinct takes hold. And it fights back. And because the Egyptians came upon the Jewish people to try to destroy them, to limit them, the power of the Jewish people rose because of the conflict. This is a very, very basic idea, very important idea. I'll give you a couple of examples, a couple of illustrations of it. Okay, one is, of course, one which many of us may remember from our adolescence, when we wanted our beard to grow, right? So someone told it, just shave more often, right? Right? The more you cut it down, right, the more it will grow back. It's a physical feature of the world, right? The survival instinct, the resistance, we know, we understand. Let me give you another illustration, which actually uses pasuk of Kasher Yanu Esai Kein Yirbeh V'Chein Yifreitz, a contemporary example. we have cousins in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not talking about my personal family. All of us, we have cousins in Eretz Yisrael. We call, right, in Eretz Yisrael, we refer to, they refer to euphemistically as the Bnei Dodim, the cousins. Right, the Arabs are our cousins in Eretz Yisrael. They don't like us so much, if you may, you may have noticed. And especially in the early part of the 2000s, right, the Intifada, all these attacks and murdering people on the roads. So, for example, and a couple of you have been there with me, we there's a community called Rechelim. Rechelim is a community on a hilltop in the Shomron. Why is it called Rechelim? Because there was a woman named Rachel Druk, and another woman, I forget her last name, another woman named Rachel, who were murdered by Palestinian terrorists on the road right near this place. Right, and this is a hilltop in the Shomron, and, you know, the heartland. And there was really nothing. There was a little army outpost, like a watch post, that was on this hilltop right nearby. So there was a little bit of a road up that was already there up to this hill because the army had a position. So a few young people, acquaintances, friends of these people said, we're going to build a community here on their name. Right, and we visited them today. Baruch Hashem, it has flourished. It just became legal. Right, more than 12 years later, it just was declared legal by the Netanyahu government in the past few months. It has permanent houses. Today it houses a top class winery. You know, used to be, it was like a Nebuch community. Now it's a, you know, very, very successful in certain ways. It's still a little hilltop, you know, but it's a thing. And I remember very vividly that when I went there the first time, and they said, "Chasher yanu isoy kein yirbeh v'chein yifreitz." The more that they try to kill us and drive us out of here, the more we set down roots. Any place they kill somebody, we're going to build a community. Right, that was the philosophy. Okay, so I'm not getting here into politics, whether you want to go that way, you don't want to go that way, but what's the idea? They were drawing out the same instinct that the Maharal is speaking about over here. The Egyptians tried to drive us down. The kayach, the survival instinct of the Jewish people, took over. Now again, that wouldn't make it that we would suddenly be able to have six tuplets. Right? That's not a conscious decision. That's why the Maharal uses language which is higher than that, the Kayach Yisrael Kodesh, that it fires itself up in order to be able to resist. And finally, there's an insight which has been said by many. Many quoted from Rav Tzadik, where Rav Tzadik spoke about the idea of people being Meiser Nefesh, exercising great self-sacrifice, you know, bow down to this Avodah Zarah or else, and they rise to the challenge. And heroic moments in, you know, in gas chambers and concentration camps and inquisitions and so on and so forth. Said Rav Tzadik that when even a regular Jew is threatened, a Jew who lives his life unremarkably, but when he's challenged, it brings out in that person the greatest strength, the greatest kaychas that person has. Kasher yanu oisei kein yirbe v'chein yifreitz. Now many said it in this way, that it takes less energy to die al kiddush Hashem than to live al kiddush Hashem. Meaning that when somebody's saying, "I'm going to kill you for this," so then the adrenaline rush takes over. The spiritual adrenaline rush, the identity adrenaline rush. No, I won't. This is not who I am when it's threatened. But how about on a Sunday afternoon? How about on a regular, nice Sunday afternoon? Right, where's that drive? Where's that identity? Yehudi anaychi, right? Yisrael anaychi. Where's that? It's so much more difficult to muster because it doesn't have the contrarian force. It doesn't have that which is threatening your existence, that the survival instinct pushes back and takes force, takes over. That's a kayak which HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in the world. The Chasher Yanu Isai Kein Yirbeh V'Chein Yifreitz. Of course, you can't always rely on it. Sometimes Chasher Yanu Isai, so it peters out and so it disappears because of an overpowering force. But when you have an eternal unerasable life force like that of the Jewish people, so then the more it gets pushed down, the more vitality it expresses. That's it. That's this concept which the Maral teaches here. So we'll just okay. I was not expecting this to take this long, but Vayakutsu mipnei bnei Yisrael, just conclude the pasuk and his interpretation of the pasuk, and they were disgusted before the bnei Yisrael. Right, that's simply what it means. Chazal say they were kakaitzim beinayim. They were like thorns in their eyes. Thorns are abrasive. They bother you. You don't want to be near them. And the Maral says Pashut because, you know, we learned in the beginning of the Gvuras Hashem how Mitzrayim stands as the antithesis to the Jewish people. Right? The shortest way to describe it, the easiest way to remember is because Mitzrayim are shtufei zima. They are awash in immorality, and the Jewish people are supposed to be seen as the opposite, as the B'nai Bris, as the people of moral purity, of the ultimate moral purity. So the more the B'nai Yisrael grew, the more, right? If you have something that's so much your antithesis, it became that much more oppressive, offensive, disgusting to the Mitzrim to be in the presence of the B'nai Yisrael, which was a good thing. In certain ways, it was a very, very good thing. Mirat Hashem, next time we will continue with more of Perek Tesvav, a little bit about the Avedas Perach, about the slavery, and a little bit more about the midwives. I just want to mention, and Max, maybe if you can, you'll send out an email to everybody, to those who aren't here, that I will not be able to be here next Sunday. Next Sunday is visiting day, when you're supposed to go and give tips to your children's counselors. So I have to, and you can't come late to visiting day because you can't leave your child waiting. So I have to leave at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So my apologies, Mirat Hashem, we will resume the following week.